Welcome to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, happy hump day to you across America. All right, Marcellus, we got a great show planned today. LeVar Arrington's going to join us. And we'll talk some about Cam Newton's strategy during free agency. And Sean Payton seemingly announcing that this will be a victory lap, final victory lap for Drew Brees as a quarterback in the NFL. We'll talk about that. But we're going to begin today. I'm going to try to unpack a documentary series that aired last night on HBO about corruption associated with NCAA mandated amateurism. And Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports, Dan Wetzel, the best sports writer working today, he's going to join us in the next segment as we try to break this down even further in the show. But I want to begin by unpacking this story, Marcellus, because, again, I don't think a lot of people got a chance to see the documentary last night, but it is a very powerful documentary. It is a very interesting documentary. I think it says a lot about the NCAA, an issue that I'm passionate about, NCAA amateurism. And so let me take a few minutes to unpack what happened last night, put it in some context, and then Marcellus and I will have a great conversation with Dan Wetzel about it. It was a two-hour documentary that aired on HBO last night and is streaming now on HBO Go. It's called The Scheme. It focuses in on the so-called Adidas investigation and trials that took place in 2017, 18, and 19 that allegedly was going to upend all of college basketball. College basketball was supposed to be shaken by its core by this investigation. If you remember, state prosecutors in New York charged 10 men, including a handful of high-ranking college basketball assistant coaches, with defrauding universities by accepting bribes to steer players to the sports agency Lloyd Management. If you've been watching this show, I was a critic of this probe. I didn't like it in real time because I thought it targeted the absolute wrong people. I thought that it was making criminals of people who allegedly were giving cash to players and families and who allegedly were doing something so unethical that it was worthy of making them a felon. I didn't like it in real time and was a critic of the probe in 2017, 18, and 19 when the convictions came in. The government's case was built on a sting operation the FBI executed on a 20-something up-and-coming agent by the name of Christian Dawkins. Dawkins had built relationships with a wide range of college coaches, including most prominently Arizona's Sean Miller, Louisville's Rick Pitino, LSU's Will Wade. They took the brunt of the criticism and were thrown in the headlines during this investigation. The FBI probe was supposed to change the face of college basketball. What it wound up doing is turning a handful of mostly black assistant basketball coaches into felons and ruining their lives. I want you guys to look at these picture collages we're showing you right now. That's who got convicted of felonies for allegedly accepting bribes during this college basketball thing. And again, I want you, not just on the black assistants, and that is what bothered me and triggered me, but also there's a white guy photo shown in these photos named Jim Gatto. He worked for Adidas. I said in real time when this was going on, Jim Gatto was thrown in and targeted to cover up the fact that they were actually targeting a bunch of black assistant coaches and they didn't want to look racist. So they threw Jim Gatto in from Adidas and put a felony on him. This whole thing was preposterous from the very beginning. The Scheme documentary intentionally exposes the fraudulent of the government's case in NCAA amateurism and unintentionally exposes the naivety and stupidity of Christian Dawkins. The Scheme is told from Dawkins' point of view. It features Dawkins, his mama, his daddy, his lawyer, Steve Haney, and Yahoo's Dan Wetzel. The scheme should be called, in my view, AGE, age, ambition, greed, and ego. Those three qualities, ambition, greed, and ego, in my view, explain Christian Dawkins. The doc ended with Christian Dawkins' mom reading a letter her son wrote as a teenager comparing himself to Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Steve Jobs, Jay-Z, and a bunch of other people. Take a listen for yourself.
It starts off, I'm great. I have a special gift from God. He's so crazy. I know this to be factual information. It is rare for someone to be as advanced as me at my age. I have a gift that truly great ones have. I am in a class of people like Gandhi, Barack Obama, Jay-Z, Martin Luther King, Tiger Woods, Dick Clark, Michael Jackson, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, etc. Revolutionary people in their fields. I'm going to chase my dreams 24/7 every day.
Throughout the documentary, Dawkins kept referring to others as idiots. But it was Dawkins whose first attempt to become an agent ended with him getting in trouble for misusing a player's credit card for $50,000 worth of Uber rides. That was on Dawkins. His next attempt to become an agent ended with the Adidas trial. Trying to start a sports agency, Christian Dawkins ran afoul of the law twice before the age of 25. That's quite impressive, especially when you consider the Adidas trial and the FBI investigation were set off when another man, Marty Belzer, was looking for a useful idiot to get him out of trouble for stealing a bunch of money from a bunch of innocent victims. Blazer identified Dawkins as the useful idiot who could set him free. The documentary explains that Blazer, not the FBI or the state prosecutors in New York, Blazer came up with the scheme to lure Dawkins into bribing college basketball coaches and calling it a crime. The Adidas trial and the FBI probe were driven by a common criminal looking to get away with his latest crime by a government, not by a government, not by state prosecutors trying to do the right thing. A common criminal set all this in motion. No one dislikes the NCAA and its amateurism fraud more than I do. But to me, Christian Dawkins was given a record company deal and this one-sided documentary that's supposed to enhance his image as a payoff for refusing to take a plea agreement and refusing to snitch on big-name college coaches. HBO's The Scheme was not unlike or was a lot like The Tiger King, the Netflix documentary that's popular right now. You couldn't find any good people on camera. No one involved in this documentary set themselves up as a good person or a hero. NCAA amateurism creates fraudulence and caters to people driven by ambition, greed, and ego. All right, I've set the table, I think, for Marcellus and Dan Wetzel to share their thoughts, what their takeaways were from the documentary. Stay right where you are. We're going to have a discussion about this documentary and the state of college athletics and where it goes from here. Stay right where you are. Speak for Yourself, presented by Hyundai. More after this short commercial break.
Muscle pain? I'm talking stop in your tracks. I'll never work out again. Oh, my God, what am I going to do kind of pain? This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Our handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. It's this simple. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and is used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to Theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, listeners to Speak for Yourself get a free charging stand with the purchase, a $79 value. That's Theragun.com/cadence. That's Theragun.com/cadence. CADENCE.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. We're joined by Dan Wetzel of Yahoo Sports, the best sports writer working today. We're going to talk about, we're joined from Dan's crib in Detroit. We're going to talk about the HBO documentary, The Scheme. I just laid it out for you. This documentary went after the NCAA and the fraudulence of amateurism. Marcellus, what was your takeaway from the documentary?
Oh, well done documentary. I think one is just the corruption and discovering corruption is mind-boggling. Like watching the trail of the FBI's investigation, and no one walked into this documentary leaving the same in terms of understanding the details of this case and how it flipped. I think that was part of it. But I think also in the grand scope was just this whole concept of amateurism. And if you look at it, how it warps our relationship with capitalism, and let's just be real, it takes even the greatest men of character, the greatest people of character, as they wrestle in this slop and try their damnedest to stay clean. And it's almost an impossible task. And I think just because of the lens of amateurism, how we have to look at collegiate sports really warps our reality, and it really turns a lot of characters into people that they don't necessarily see themselves becoming.
Dan, what was your takeaway?
Well, I think Marcellus makes a great point about the capitalism, because I say often amateurism is trying to stop the wheels of capitalism. It's saying that people who have value don't have value, and that's just not going to work in America. So you create an underground economy because of these rules, and the rules are just concepts. They're bogus. People are only amateurs at things they aren't any good at. You're an amateur cook, and then if you get good at it, you start your own restaurant. So these kids, these basketball players are great athletes. They are good at what they're doing. But the amateurism creates the whole problem, and I think that's what you look at. If you look at the crimes, the supposed crimes that went on here, almost none of it is a crime except for this one rule that only applies to basketball and football, basically, that creates it. If this is a young recording artist, if this is a young business entrepreneur, if this is anything else, none of this stuff would be a crime. It's only a crime because the NCAA has found a way to profit off this ancient concept of amateurism. And I think that's really when you look at it. I mean, the story is basically Christian Dawkins' story. It's told through him. Some people are going to like him, some aren't. But I think at the end, you look at it and go, gosh, this was an unbelievable farce that all of this went into. What criminals were we trying to catch here?
Marcellus, I want to ask you, friends of mine last night that I played football with at Ball State, we were texting back and forth. Some felt exploited as college athletes. I didn't. I feel like there's a handful of really elite college athletes that should be paid. Your experience as a college athlete, did you feel exploited? And do you think everybody should be paid in college football and basketball?
Oh. The trillion-dollar question, I think, there, because I don't have a pragmatic approach, a realistic approach on how you can pay everyone on a level playing field. What happens to those lesser sports and those lesser athletes in that same conversation of paying athletes? I didn't feel exploited. I went to a small school. I thought I got a tremendous education. My situation is, I think, unique to those who are in the pros or go through the collegiate experience. I think that my surroundings made me feel like I had gotten proper reception in terms of room, board, education, and networking, et cetera. But for most guys, I think that they feel on the other side of this. You look at it, and being at my school as well, Dan brought up a great point. I went to school with Lauryn Hill, the famous rapper, and it was crazy being in class with her, and she would be there for 2 weeks, a month, and then she would disappear to film a movie or do an album and then come right back to class like nothing happened. Meanwhile, coming back to class looking a lot richer, living a better life than all of us. But she wasn't deemed an amateur at what she did. She became a professional rapper and was able to reap those rewards. Meanwhile, a guy like me who was doing great on the football field but was deemed an amateur was sitting there broke with his mouth wide open looking at her in envy. So it's kind of hard to really reconcile those two worlds.
Dan, move us to a new topic. I want to ask you this. My takeaway watching the documentary, why I'm critical of Christian Dawkins, it's because of those coaches that had the assistant coaches and the Jim Gattos who had their life ruined because Christian Dawkins brought them into this probe or FBI sting. Do you feel sorry for the assistant coaches, the Book Richardsons, the Chuck Persons, the Tony Blands that got involved in this thing because of Christian Dawkins? Do you feel sorry for them?
I do. I feel somewhat sorry for their plight because, first off, they're doing a job, and it's a well-defined job of what they're supposed to be doing on these staffs. But mainly the crimes that they committed or were convicted of or pled guilty to just don't really feel like crimes. You talk about the bribery the assistant coaches got. They weren't in position to ever deliver on this supposed bribe. They were getting paid to steer players on their roster to Christian Dawkins and the FBI undercover agents. They really wouldn't have any power over them, as Christian says. That deal is made directly with the player or his family, not some assistant coach. So if I say to you, Jason, I'm going to give you $10,000, get me a meeting with Donald Trump. And you say, I can't get you a meeting with Donald Trump. And I say, don't worry about it. Just take the $10,000. And you do no effort at trying to get me that meeting. And this is somehow ruled illegal. I don't know if this will be illegal, but let's just say, what'd you do? You didn't really do anything except some sucker was willing to give you $10,000 for something you couldn't do. And now your entire career is blown up. You're a felon. You struggle to get a new job. You've been embarrassed. You had the FBI kick down your door and come in. These crimes are nothing. You talked about Marty Blaser earlier. Marty Blaser stole millions of dollars from people. And he got off, basically, got probation, because he turned in a bunch of guys who either accepted thousands or gave away thousands. Didn't steal anything, didn't really get bribed, nothing really happened. So I feel bad for these guys that this is the extent of what has happened to them when you're still looking for a victim to this supposed crime.
Marcellus, did you have any sympathy for these assistants?
Not really, no. Look, the end game obviously makes you feel a little sympathetic for them, but their initial relationship with Christian and all the ongoings before even this probe started, obviously that wasn't fully above board. Now the conversation of, is it a crime in the first place? Obviously we're having that conversation, but let's still, you don't know Christian in those worlds and in that scope unless you were doing something not above board. But like the coaches, like most people involved with this, they went down a crooked road as straight as possible. And I think that because of their relationship and the familiarity and the intimacy of that relationship, they finally got caught and discovered. Not necessarily the worst thing, but obviously something that was unethical by NCAA rules.
Marcellus, I'm going to stay with you and Dan, but I want you to answer this question as well. There was a lot of talk about Rick Pitino when this all was going on. He's the dirtiest man in college basketball, allegedly. Obviously, Will Wade and Sean Miller don't look good after the playing of the tapes. Marcellus, Christian Dawkins said something that I truly, truly believe, and I don't care how people think it comes off. I have no respect for the big-time Division I coaches who make millions of dollars who aren't trying to figure out ways to share that wealth with the players. The guys that aren't trying to share the wealth are the guys I have no respect for. Christian Dawkins said it. It speaks to my heart. That is exactly what I believe. Marcellus, your reaction, then Dan.
Yeah, when he said that, it did take me aback. You had to really dissect that to understand where he was coming from. There's one thing to have that in your character, in your desires, but then how do you fulfill that? I think that's where it gets murky in terms of NCAA and their rule book, et cetera. But I do side with him. in terms of someone who's looking out and saying, hey, since this is rising my tide and my boat, I'm not going to forget about those who are helping me raise this same tide.
Well, and that's rowing the boat.
Coaches were, hey, how about building a boat? Let's go that far. But yeah, to that point, and all surrounding parties, all of us are intimate with collegiate sports. We know about it, been through the experience. Just a year ago, I was out to dinner, and I saw one of my childhood friends who's now a coach on a big-time program, and I just chopping it up, you know, real quick. Said, what you doing there? He says, oh, well, one of the top recruits in the country. I said, oh, yeah, you gonna get him? How's that looking? He said, it depends on if we're going to sign to 180. I said, sign to 180? I'm thinking it's some new deal. He's like, that's the minimum price to get this kid, 180. Are we signing up for $180,000? This is just a year or so ago. So the point of it is, all of us know how this looks. When you peel it back, it's just unfortunate we wanted to single out these individuals who really are not the biggest culprits in this scheme.
I thought Christian's line on that was, you know, it's got a lot of depth to it. And I think what you want out of these coaches who are making huge sums of money, four or five, you know, I think Patino, $6 or $7 million, is some care for the player. Now, ideally you say, hey, I'm going to share in this wealth. But I also think the coaches need to be cognizant that by sharing the wealth, you can ruin the kid's career. You take the kid in the movie, Brian Bowen Jr., who was supposed to go to Louisville. His father made a deal with Adidas to get him shipped to Louisville. He ended up never playing college basketball, having to go to Australia for over a year to get his career back on track. Didn't get the opportunity at a real education. I know that can be farcical to get an education, but I think the coaches that try to really help the kids do that do a little bit better. And he had to really struggle just to get back into the NBA for a couple games before everything shut down. So as much as you say, hey, pay the players, coaches should pay the players, the rules are the rules, and the rules can really hurt a kid. And I'm not defending the rule, but this is the reality you have to live in. So you can hurt a kid by saying, I'm going to give you $10,000 a month. It's a very, very complicated thing on what a coach should do, because obviously they get it when they're making millions and the kid's not getting anything.
All right, let's end on this note. Marcellus start us here. Amateurism to me seems to be on life support. You got laws coming from California and other states that are going to infringe and let athletes benefit in the marketing deals. How much longer can amateurism last?
If you run the mental projections, you would say a decade, maybe maximum. Look at it, the Power Five conferences, super conferences. We're already hearing those rumblings and those things being created right now. And it's going to undermine sooner or later, once they have that power, that solidarity, what we know as the NCAA right now. Kind of going back, if you're a historian of these type of things, you can go back to the AAU days in different sports where the AAU had their powers and how that was a competing interest with the NCAA. And we know NCAA has prevailed in that. So just in those considerations of looking at the NCAA as is, I think a decade from now, we're going to look back and say what the NCAA used to be. It's going to be different.
I think it's weakening. I think this is one of those things that it's going to stay and then fall all at once. And I think a thing about the scheme that is good, I don't think anybody watches it and comes out of it with a greater appreciation for amateurism. I think a lot of people would learn more about how ridiculous this concept is. And look, you don't have to pay the college athletes. That's a straw man that the NSA wants to do, because it's very complicated to design a system that would pay all the athletes. What you do is what the Olympics did and allow athletes to cash in on their name, image, and likeness. That allows Michael Phelps to swim in five Olympics. That allows Simone Biles to make tons of money and come back and train. It allows Usain Bolt. It's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. They've earned that money. And if they were able to do that here, it would be no problem for Adidas to pay a kid and say, hey, we'd like you to go to Louisville. It would be no problem for Christian Dawkins to serve as a kind of a middleman to set these things up. Adidas and Nike see value in these players. It's the NCAA and amateurs that are saying, no, you're wrong. Capitalism is going to work in this country. It's going to happen one way or the other. So I think amateurism is on its last legs, but the National Collegiate Athletic Association is going to white knuckle this thing as long as it can, because they want to control all the money. They want to get as much revenue in, and then they decide how to distribute it out.
Dan, I wish that the NBA and the NFL would somehow partner with the NCAA, figure out a way to pay the top talent while still in college, because I think that benefits the NBA and the NFL. I want you to think about this, Dan, though, because, again, Dan is the best sports writer working probably in the past decade. Here's something I want you to think about. The impact potentially of the coronavirus on college athletics, because I think it's going to be far more complicated post-coronavirus or in this coronavirus era to get the college system working the way it used to work. It'll be easier, I think, for the NFL and the professional leagues. And so I think you might start seeing more kids, the talented ones, choose an XFL or the G League, or is it the D League? I can't remember, D or G League, whatever they're calling it now in the NBA. I think you may see more people choosing that route. If the money gets slightly better, you're going to see some 18, 19-year-old kids choose the XFL over college sports.
I would agree with that. I think it becomes more appealing as it goes. I also think the colleges are going to have to really struggle for money. They're losing money right now. And if this thing, and this is the last thing I want to hear, and I know you two either, if this stretches into football season and there isn't a football season, every one of these schools is in a lot of trouble financially. And so it's going to contract a lot of things. College athletics has spent. They're just swimming in money. They don't pay taxes. They don't really pay their athletes. And they've had all these cable deals and everything. When that goes, and now you're no longer growing, but you need to maybe cut some staff or cut back on things, it's going to be very, very intense on what goes. And so I agree with you, Jason. What we come out of here with may not be the exact same college system we went into the coronavirus with.
Thank you so much, Dan. All right, stick around. Don't go anywhere. LeVar Arrington is going to join us from his crib. Next!
Muscle pain? I'm talking stop in your tracks. I'll never work out again. Oh, my God, what am I going to do kind of pain? This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Our handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. It's this simple. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and is used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to Theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, listeners to Speak for Yourself get a free charging stand with the purchase, a $79 value. That's Theragun.com/cadence. That's Theragun.com/cadence. CADENCE.
Welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib, presented by Hyundai. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, let's go out to LeVar Arrington's crib and bring LeVarrington, as Uncle Jimmy likes to call him, into the conversation. All right, listen, Brady Quinn, our very own Brady Quinn of Fox Sports, had an interesting observation about Cam Newton, the former Carolina Panthers quarterback, who is now a free agent. Brady suggests Cam would be smart to wait until after the NFL draft to make a decision about where he plays next season, rather than making a decision before the draft and risk the opportunity of a team drafting a quarterback and their plans change. It's not a bad suggestion in my mind. Marcellus, what do you think of that strategy?
Oh, it's a great, great suggestion if you're Cam Newton, because the last thing you want to do is put yourself in a position where you get rear-ended by a draft choice. It doesn't even matter what round of that draft choice. Obviously, if it's higher, even more deadly to your career. But if you're Cam Newton, you want to see what the terrain looks like before you step into the building. You got to understand that ownership, management, they're always trying to get an ROI, return on investment, especially from draft choices. So we all can think about many of cases. One that comes to mind is Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith. When you bring in a new Jim Harbaugh who has a Colin Kaepernick, despite Alex Smith being a winning quarterback for the 49ers at the time, what happens? You get hurt, they look for the other guy. I've seen it play out so many ways, even without injury. Being in San Diego and watching what Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers went through, Doug Flutie and Rob Johnson, keep going on and on. Basically, if you land somewhere and they're not fully invested in you, and especially if they drafted your position, you will get rear-ended, and they will bet on that return on investment, which is the forecast of a youngster over a proven Cam Newton. LeVar?
Yeah, I have to disagree because, again, this is a luxury approach to being a free agent. We got health concern that it's plaguing his ability to be signed. Then there's signability. All right. Then now you're talking about he was not released at the time free agency began. So he's late to the game. Nobody's going to just wait to fill the needs of what you have for your team long beyond the opening of free agency. So he's been in a compromised position since being let go because of how late it was. So I don't see it being a good look to say wait, because honestly, the position he's in right now, he may have to go in as a backup to begin with. So I don't even think it is about getting rear-ended by somebody who gets drafted, because he may not go to a place where he's the starter coming in anyway.
LeVar, I think you make a decent point that kind of sways me a little bit, because when I first heard this, I was like, not bad, because again, someone drafts a quarterback. But I do think the situation is desperate enough for Cam that he needs to get in the door with somebody, start impressing those coaches, start impressing teammates with not just healthy, but right mindset, leader. All in, because again, and some of this, I'm joking, but I'm serious. These little shirtless videos he's putting out every day that I think he thinks is wowing football people. Look, I've been in NFL locker rooms as a journalist. Y'all lived in NFL locker rooms. Everybody in the NFL damn near looks good with their shirt off. Hell, Lincoln Kennedy and Jerry Ball look halfway decent with their shirt off. Cam's not really impressing right. anybody with
you
his shirt off.
You a lie, Whitlock. Don't you say right. Lincoln Kennedy with his shirt off pictures. Jerry Ball did not look good with his shirt off.
Well, there's a lot of guys in the NFL locker room that look good with their shirt off. And so I just don't think he's impressing anybody with these deals. Cam, no one questions whether you look good with your shirt off, whether you run hard on a Stairmaster, whether you lift weights. We all know that. You were blessed by God. You got a good work ethic as it comes to the physical thing. We all know that. The issues, to me, are more between the ears, and the sooner you get signed to a team, the quicker you can start convincing people, not only is my physical body look great, but my mindset is also appropriate for the situation I'm in.
No, there's three ways you have to look at this. And LeVar brought up one. Cam Newton's a backup. If he's a backup, he's going to go to a situation where there's already a proven starter. And in that proven starter, wherever those situations are, he's going to be looked at as secondary. So he doesn't want to sign up to that. So there's only two other options. You sign up right now as a starter in a Miami or LA Chargers. But those are teams that are also looking to draft that rear end scenario where someone, Tua, Justin Herbert, whoever it may be, Justin Love, you draft one of those guys, and the next thing you know, Cam's a ticking time bomb. He knows it's over. So then there's only one more scenario where Cam can go somewhere and say, I'm Cam Newton. You're not going to draft at this position because I am a former MVP, and you're going to believe in me. That situation doesn't exist. So therefore, if you're Cam, Your best option is to go somewhere where you really can have impact. And you won't know that until after the draft. So it's an unfortunate situation. The purest definition of dilemma, which is two bad choices. He has all bad choices around. But the best of those choices, the lesser of the evils, is to wait post-draft.
LeVar?
Again, I disagree. The best choice is to get on a roster. And whether you end up being a starter, whether you end up being a backup, whether you get rear-ended by a draft choice, you do not own the luxury of saying, I'm going to wait. I just do not see that taking place. And this kind of is a continuation of what I was unable to address, Marcellus, you saying yesterday about Cam and people wanting to see him perform and you talking about his shirt being off with. Listen, he said it in the video. I'm not an underdog. I've never been an underdog. And to have the mentality that he has coming into this, I think is going to create some trepidation and signability and what his role represents moving forward. I will say that is a tad bit, it could be a tad bit concerning some of the things that Whit you're raising as issues going into, are we going to bring Cam Newton into our locker room and make him a part of our football team? So again, he has to be willing and open to understanding that Cam Newton is now an underdog and Cam Newton has to take the opportunity that is allotted to him within free agency to win a job, not come in as a starter. I don't see it that way.
LeVar, let's go back to when we played. LeVar, you ready for this? Okay. You were the second overall pick. I was a second round pick. And we all had teammates that used to say in the latter rounds, fifth, sixth, seventh round, man, it would have been better if I was a free agent draft choice. You know why? I would be able to pick where's the best situation I would get an opportunity to make this roster. We were afforded the luxury of being banked on and put on that roster regardless of how we perform. There are guys, and Cam Newton, crazy enough as it sounds, is in that position where he needs to navigate what that landscape looks like. He won't be able to have that full intel until post-draft.
But now you're talking about money, right? Now we're talking about money, and that's an entirely different conversation. If you come in at that league minimum,
hey, listen,
if you're
we got to wrap it up, but I do want to add this, and I say this in all seriousness. I'm going to side with LeVar. LeVar made a point that I can really relate to during this coronavirus quarantine. It's better to be on a roster than sitting out here single during this quarantine. I don't know if y'all can see how chapped my lips are, but I ain't never been this thirsty. My God. I'm buying stock in chapstick right now. Y'all got it good, bro. Y'all got it good.
I hear that part.
All right, stick around. LeVar's going to rejoin us next. We're going to talk about Drew Brees and Sean Payton. Speak for yourself from the crib, presented by Hyundai. More after this. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley, joined once again by LeVar Arrington from his crib. All right, let's move to New Orleans. And Sean Payton, yesterday on ESPN, seemed to indicate that Drew Brees, this would be his final season. He came back today and clarified his comments, saying he messed up, that Drew Brees is going year to year. He's not certain this is his final season. All right, Marcellus, do you buy this clarification or are the Saints planning on this being Drew Brees' final season?
No, I don't buy this clarification. You know I don't. I trust his first response. Sean Payton, like, oh, you know what? I actually meant he's just taking it year by year. April Fools. Ain't nobody being fooled by that. Come on, Sean Payton. You know what you really meant, which is you're trying to gently nudge Drew Brees out the door. If not, after a year, maybe kick him out the door if you can do that. But it's going to be difficult because of all the equity Drew Brees has in the New Orleans community. But it's funny what's happening here behind the scenes. It's really this perception that happens with a lot of franchises. I actually benefited from this same thing. When you're a backup, I was behind Bruce Smith for my first few years. I would play 15 snaps, 20 snaps, luck up and get a sack. And all of a sudden, upstairs, they start running the projections. Wait a minute. In 20 plays, Wiley got a sack? Imagine if he played as many plays as Bruce Smith, 70 or 80. May get 3 or 4 a game. That's not how it works, because Taysom Hill has thrown 15 passes in the NFL, and now they're starting to make these projections that he's ready for that full-time starting duty. After 15 throws, when you still have Drew Brees, a top-5 quarterback on your roster, patience is a virtue right here. I would ride Drew Brees until the wheels fall off and not force Taysom in there yet.
I buy the clarification in terms of settling down the amount of media attention that will be given to Drew Brees if you allow this to be his swan song season. He meant what he said on that interview, and that is the clarity. This probably is indeed Drew Brees' last season as a New Orleans Saint. It also gives them an opportunity without pressure to evaluate Taysom Hill and what he may bring to the table when he gets more opportunities without Bridgewater being in the fold as a backup as well. So it may not be Taysom Hill's team after Drew Brees goes, but they are allotting Drew Brees the opportunity for one last time to try to get that elusive second Super Bowl that they've been so seeking. They're going to be competitive for one more year, and you take maybe off the pressure of, okay, Drew Brees' interviews, Sean Payton's interviews, the players' interviews every single week about this being the last time Drew Brees plays this team, this being his last week 3. You're now giving them the opportunity to focus on football by this clarification.
Well, let's keep in mind, and Marcellus referenced it, that this was sparked by a question about Taysom Hill. And it seems to me like Sean Payton is kind of falling in love with Taysom Hill and the idea of Taysom Hill and what all the diversity he can bring to an offense. And you got to remember, I think it was just in their last playoff game, there were some of us that are like, man, put Taysom Hill back out there. Drew Brees is struggling. Sean Payton may have been one of those people. And that's, again, why I don't believe the clarification. I think, like Bill Belichick fell in love with Jimmy Garoppolo, Sean Payton is falling in love with Taysom Hill, even though he only has 15 passes in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, look, think about it. First and 10 on your own 25. We don't know who Taysom Hill is. Maybe Sean Payton feels like he knows who he is, but there's a large amount of football between where Drew Brees is, even at his worst, which looked like that playoff game we were talking about, and Taysom Hill at his height in that same moment. There's still a lot of meat and potatoes football that is undiscovered with Taysom Hill under center. So if you're Sean Payton, if you're the New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees just came off a 2-year deal. If you really want Drew Brees out the door, give him a 1-year Phillip Rivers deal for $25 million. Give him the ceremony and the proper exit he deserves, and then put Taysom Hill in there. Right now, they're juggling because I think they're not being sincere in what they really want.
Yeah, my final point is you're killing two birds with one stone here. You're giving Drew Brees that respect and that opportunity to try to get that Super Bowl, but you're also saying if we start to play Taysom Hill – and we play him and he can't live up to that billing of being a starting quarterback, you have a safety net in putting Drew Brees back out there and then figuring it out from there.
Hey, LeVar, I do want to end on this note. There is no health risk to combing your hair. I've checked with doctors. You can go ahead and comb your hair without any threat of illness during this quarantine. So
my hair looks way better than yours right now, Jason Whitlock.
Uh-oh. So Jimmy's coming up next. We got an approval rating on that HBO documentary and Tristan Dawkins. Stick around. All right, welcome back to Speak for Yourself from the Crib. Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. All right, joined by our man Uncle Jimmy from his crib.
Yes, sir.
Uncle Jimmy, who's your big dummy of the day?
Oh, man, this is cake right here. Big dummy of the day go to the person who said that they didn't feel exploited by college athletics. Man, if you don't say this thing right, you wasn't good enough to be exploited by college athletics. Come on, man.
Let's go. We only had a thousand people at the game. Come on, man.
All right. Well, listen. We had a conversation earlier about the HBO documentary, The Scheme, which I thought was going to be a story about how you got this job, but it ended up being about college basketball and amateurism. Uncle Jimmy, I know you got a chance to watch The Scheme. Did you have any reaction?
Oh, yeah, I had a reaction. Let me put it like this, man. I heard all of y'all talk, man, and y'all missed it, man. To me, the star of this whole thing, of this whole documentary, was Christian Dawkins' mama, Lucretia Von Dawkins. You know what I'm saying? See, remember in the beginning of this, remember when Christian said he wasn't a lot of the phone call? He was a lot of the phone call, all right. His ass just didn't want to have to call his mama. Now, see, and when he did get a chance to make a phone call, did he call his mama? No, he called his sister. Because he already knew what his mama was going to say. That's why when his mama got on the phone, he was already crying. Look, man, ain't no man in the world want to make that call to his mama when he know he done messed up. Man, we would rather call our daddy than call our mama if we had a daddy.
That's true.
Hey, man, but you know what? Uncle Jimmy always say, right is right, wrong is wrong, and it ain't no in the middle. Christian Dawkins is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He's a handler.
Mm.
Parents hand their kids to him. He's a handler. Parents hand their kids to him because he makes them feel safe. When the fact of the matter is, he don't mean no more good for their kids than them white coaches coming into their house, coming to get their kids. The fact is, both of them got one thing in common. They own personal embetterment. Bottom line, case closed. That's all Chase, no lace. What you got, man?
Wow. You went all the way there. Well, I'm going to have to marinate on that one. But look, I got Christian Dawkins
as a dumpster fire.
Four in job performance, two in all-time greatness, eight in character, 20 in authenticity. Dumpster fire. The internet agrees with me.
Nah, man. Marcellus. Status, man. He did his job. It's just he's doing it in a corrupt world. So messed up for him. But, yeah, give him respect.
See you tomorrow.
Dear mama.